Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. You know, every day, thousands of veterans and their families right here in Connecticut experience homelessness or are at risk to become homeless. That's why we're reconnecting with Homes for the Brave to bring you up to date on how they're working and growing to serve more vets and their loved ones with a range of critical supports and services that are due to our Connecticut heroes. We'll also entice you out for a few laughs to benefit the agency as they host their 8th annual For Veterans by Veterans Comedy Night. Then we're going to replay a visit we had in early January with the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford. They're providing a community and academic forum for the discussion of ethics in government, the importance of civil discourse in politics, and citizen involvement in public service and government. We're also going to discuss how the center is looking to encourage students and others to pursue careers in public service. And then we'll close inviting you to the 18th annual Walk for Independence to benefit ARI of Connecticut. It's one of the smallest providers of services for adults with developmental disabilities in the state. The ARI team believes their uniquely intimate size enables them to provide a family-like environment and a much more individualized approach to services and supports based on each individual needs and interests. Stay tuned and find out more. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Griffin Health's Valley Goes Pink initiative is hosting their third annual Par for Pink golf fundraiser on Tuesday, May 21st at the golf club at Oxford Greens in Oxford, with proceeds benefiting the Hewitt Center for Breast Wellness at Griffin Hospital. The Valley Goes Pink is a grassroots community-wide effort to increase awareness about breast cancer and the importance of early detection, as well as supporting the Hewitt Center, and to celebrate the charitable spirit of the region's businesses and organizations. For more information about the upcoming events and joining the campaign, visit griffinhealth.org/pink. Well, the voice on the other end of the line this morning for this segment is a familiar one to our longtime listeners and to anyone in Southern Connecticut who may know of veterans who have received help through ABRI Homes for the Brave. Vince Santilli is on the line with us. He has been near and dear to this organization and one of their greatest advocates for most of, if not their entire history. They've been serving veterans for almost a quarter century now. Oh, my God, Vince. Who'd have thought way back then during our first couple of conversations in the early 2000s that Homes of the Brave would be what it is here today in 2024. Congratulations to you and your team, and I'm sure you count hundreds and hundreds of veterans and their loved ones as your biggest supporters and advocates, but we want to bring everyone else into the picture here. So we're going to be inviting them to a comedy show that's coming up. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but for now, how are you doing? How's things going at Homes for the Brave here in 2024?
Well, we're doing tremendous, John, and that's always the word for the day around here. And, you know, we're under heavy construction because we're adding a wing to this building and an elevator, which is critically important these days because many of the veterans we serve at this point have mobility issues. You know, we have veterans in their 20s, veterans in their 80s, and everything in between here in our men's transitional house on Park Avenue in Bridgeport. So it's just an exciting time. This product of this expansion is just going to be spectacular.
Well, over the years, you and your team have touched 1,800 veterans, men and women, and their families, virtually all of them. Tell us about what Homes for the Brave is today. You operate several programs. So let's hear about them.
Well, John, we have a vocational program that helps our men and women find employment and educational opportunities. We have a clinical program, which helps them with their mental health issues. And in just last year, you know, 73% of the veterans we're serving are experiencing mental health and or addiction issues. And so we have a wonderful clinical psychologist by the name of Dr. Stephanie Lynam as our chief clinical officer. And so she heads up our clinical program. And, you know, in the past, Steph's been with us a little more than 5 years. And previous to that, John, veterans had to go to get mental health issues addressed at typically the VA medical centers, West Haven most of the time, sometimes Newington, once in a while the Bronx. And so Steph enables that to occur, you know, right here on site in many, many cases.
Yeah, sure. I guess I kind of liken the situation to, you know, you can certainly go to a big box auto service store and get your brakes fixed, but wouldn't you rather go to a brake guy? Right? You know, wouldn't veterans be better served in an environment and by a team and a professional who has 100% of their dedicated expertise and energy like you offer at Homes for the Brave?
No question about it. And John, then talking about our programs as well, in 2022, June 22nd to be exact of 22, we opened up an annex in downtown Bridgeport. So it's right across from Joseph's Steakhouse on Fairfield Avenue.
Yep.
Technically, the address is Lafayette Circle, but there's no beds there, but we have an intake case manager that's a Marine Corps combat veteran. We have a therapist there. We have an emergency food pantry. We have a group room. And this is for veterans and their family members. So we are seeing things that we had never before seen in our history because all of it was residential. And so that's just, you know, we're so excited about that. And then also in 2022, we opened two houses in West Haven, Connecticut, just a few blocks away from the VA Medical Center. They comprise 15 beds and they house male veterans experiencing homelessness. And the beds are almost always full.
Mm-hmm. Homes for the Brave also was really, you know, far ahead of what was happening across most of the rest of the country, and not only recognizing the epidemic of concerns shared by women veterans, but actually stepping up and doing something really important for women vets.
No question about it, because we have the Medeiros House, named after a remarkable young man, PFC, Nicholas Medeiros from Wilton, Connecticut, who was killed in action 1 month before his 20th birthday. And this house was opened in 2011. And I remember being there in my previous career, which was running a bank foundation, and saying, wow, these are going to pop up all over the place in different parts of Connecticut. And guess what, John? Here it is, 2024, and it's still the first and only home in the state of Connecticut exclusively for women veterans and their young children. We have 14 beds there, 10 for the veterans themselves, and 3 for children or overflow. And right now, all 10 of the veterans' beds are occupied. And then we have an 8-year-old little boy, a 4-year-old little boy, and a beautiful little girl that just turned 1 there with their moms, as well as a dog there with the dog's mom. And so, you know, this is really something special. It's just a beautiful house, and in a clean, safe environment enables our women to get back on their feet.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more, Vince, about how that family atmosphere is so expertly combined with the professionals on your team who provide the care and support and oversight of these individuals. I mean, this is about as far from a clinical environment as you may be able to get.
Well, absolutely, John, because, you know, these women are in their home right now, and it's really something special. Nancy Carrion is our program manager there, and she just has so much patience and does a wonderful job with our women, and, you know, and they're made to feel, and the children, and I like the dynamic when there's children in the house, because, you know, the other women veterans that are there then kind of pitch in to help the mom a little bit, and I think it's just a nice dynamic.
One of the tragedies we're continuing to hear about and hope it goes away, and it just doesn't seem to, is the epidemic of suicide amongst our veteran community. We just can't seem to get our arms around the issue to the extent where we can start turning the numbers down. What are you looking at Homes for the Brave in terms of both the epidemic of suicide and the unique ways that your organization can maybe intervene and support and save some lives?
Well, without question, John, and you know what? I mean, mental health issues, suicide obviously among them, but mental health issues for veterans and for non-veterans, I think, have exploded in this country. And a lot of folks really attributed that to the pandemic. And all that went along with the, you know, COVID-19 pandemic. But I think things were heading in that direction anyway. And that's the reason why we opened the annex in downtown Bridgeport. It's only 3 minutes away from here, as long as Roosevelt School across the street's not getting out or, or coming in.
Sure.
But, you know, but that is something that is a necessity. And it's just, you know, that it's there. It's part of... it's part of the fabric of this country, quite unfortunately, but and so we are just trying to be a resource to help those veterans and their family members that are experiencing mental health issues.
Yeah. Well, as it highlights on your website, homesforthebrave.org, every day in our country, almost 2 million veterans are either at risk or they find themselves homeless, thousands in Connecticut. What is your vision for the next 10 years for Homes for the Brave in terms of trying to gain the momentum and the funding and the energy and the political will to create more of what you guys have already got so right?
Well, you know what, John? It's funny because I think a major challenge facing our veterans in all of our facilities, the average length of stay is going up, okay? In the last year, here in our men's transitional house on Park Avenue, the average stay went from 120 to 183 days. Our women's house went from 183 to 226 days. And when you think about that, it's not because our veterans weren't ready to become permanently housed. It's because there's just a lack of housing out there. And so these men and women are ready to move on, but guess what? There's just nothing there that's clean, safe, and affordable in the way of rental housing to get them permanently in a permanent housing situation. And so that's, as we look at that as an organization, you know, we're always doing a little strategic planning, and sometimes it's hard because we're just so busy on a day-to-day basis.
Sure.
But one of the things that we could foresee us being a part of a solution for some veterans is, you know, perhaps like a tiny homes village. And so we have done some schematics around that. But, you know, a lot of things would have to go right. And I don't really see that really happening until possibly 2026 or beyond. And everything would just have to break right. Because what happens is when you talk to people in our communities and say, hey, we're thinking about a tiny homes village that would have a little community center for the veterans with a computer room and a, you know, maybe a little exercise room and case managers available and so forth, with then a village of 40 to 50 tiny homes ringing that community center, everybody will say, that's a tremendous idea. That's great. But then you say, hey, you know what? We have one in mind, and it's right around the corner from your house. All of a sudden, it's not so great. And so so there's a lot of things that you have to battle here. Of course, funding being the major, major one, okay? But then location, and then, you know, and then the not in my backyard.
Yeah.
Response that often becomes, you know, so I think we could overcome all of those. I think a lot of things would have to break right. And we, you know, we've even, again, shared this vision with some of our political leaders here in Connecticut. And again, they think think it's, you know, a great idea. They think it's something that's necessary. But again, you've got to have a lot of things have to fall in place to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, I always have said that I think the biggest way to remove the fear of the monster in the closet or the boogeyman under the bed is to actually put the people who may be opposed to the proximity of a population into the room with them, and to help them get to know the people who need the help and people like you who are providing the help and who will provide the oversight of these organizations and agencies that you want to, you know, put in their neighborhood. So one of the great ways you guys at Homes for the Brave are able to get people from all walks and all communities into the same room with your team and your vets is through this great upcoming April 5th event at Vizzano's, your next Homes for the Brave for Veterans by Veterans comedy night. Why don't you please take advantage and extend an invitation to anybody who likes to laugh and really wants to make a difference to veterans here in Connecticut and at Homes for the Brave to come on out, enjoy dinner and some laughs.
Oh, absolutely, John. And this is something, this will be the eighth one. And we call it For Veterans by Veterans. We're not pulling people out of the audience. These are professional comics that are U.S. military veterans. We have a, you know, an expert in the comedy field, Brad Axelrod, coming, who formerly owned and started Treehouse Comedy Clubs, coming out of retirement. And he is going to be doing this for us, and we'll drive him crazy because we'll say, no, all of them have to be U.S. military veterans. And we have an incredible lineup. This is Friday night, April 5th. So it'll be a wonderful dinner, and this all takes place at Vizzano's Four Seasons in Stratford. Last year, we had 366 people in attendance, so we had a huge crowd, and we think we'll be close to that this year. We already have 200 tickets committed, and so it's a great, the doors open at 6. A wonderful meal is served. There's a, you know, cash bar. There's raffles and things going on, and then at 8 o'clock, a comedy show starts, and in essence, we're going to have four because there'll be an MC, which is Billy Wynn. And I'm sure you know Billy.
Oh, sure.
And Billy from a long time in the radio business, and he's been a wonderful stand-up comedian as well. And Billy's a U.S. Army veteran, and he'll be the MC of the show. And then we're going to have three phenomenal comics. We'll have Noah Miller, who is a Coast Guard veteran. And then we'll have co-headliners. Brad Lowry was a U.S. Army veteran, and Mitch Stinson was a naval aviator. He was our headliner a couple years back, and we rarely ever do this, but he was so incredibly well-received that we are bringing him back. And I will tell you, the audience will adore him. He's just tremendous and is so tuned into our mission. He's been here. He's visited our facilities. And he is just so excited about coming down from Maine to do this show.
That's great. Well, with the help of community members, including you folks that are listening right now, Homes for the Brave is going to continue to uphold their mission of helping Connecticut's veterans and other individuals experiencing homelessness to return to meaningful, productive lives. I hope you'll consider joining them at the that their upcoming benefit that they're having at Vizzano's, this eighth annual For Veterans by Veterans comedy night. If you'd like to learn more about this organization or get tickets and make reservations, once again, just go to their website, homesforthebrave.org. One of their keystones, as I call him, Vince Santilli, is on the line with us this morning, reminding us how important their work is. We hope you'll get involved. homesforthebrave.org. Vince, thank you so much. Best of luck with the comedy show. Well, as you heard from the introduction, in our mission to expose our listeners to all kinds of things they never heard about before on the award-winning For the People, my first stop for the new year is the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service, and I'm pleased to welcome their director, Dr. Catherine Owens. And the Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service was established at the University of Hartford in 2011. And the purpose of the Rell Center is to promote the values exemplified by the life and career of our 87th governor, Jody Rell, specifically the value of integrity in government and public service and responsible participation in public life, something we hope to see a lot, capital L-O-T, underline in 2024. Right, Catherine?
Absolutely, yes.
Let's push for a lot of integrity and responsible participation. I love the fact that the importance of civil discourse in politics is right up front there in the mission statement. And I have to say, Governor Rell was a multiple time guest here on our program over the years, first as lieutenant governor and then as governor. As a matter of fact, she probably qualifies as top state official who has been on this program the most. I've had other governors in clips or in single segments, but she was at least a three-peater during her tenure. So I'm really glad to be able to help carry on the torch and carry on her legacy by helping promote this fantastic center that you have been charged with. So first, a little about you. What brought a PhD from Georgia up to Connecticut and seated you at the head of the table here at the Rell Center?
Well, thank you so much for that introduction about the Rell Center in general. And yeah, it is, it's something that I've just been doing at the University of Hartford since 2019. I am originally from Georgia, a small town in South Georgia, and I went to college at the College of Charleston in South Carolina. And I had a great time in college, and I ended up with three undergraduate degrees, studio art, biology, and anthropology. And then I went on to work through a master's of environmental studies, and I got my PhD actually in the Netherlands. And it was all about water policy in the Netherlands and in other places. And so my first job after finishing my PhD, I was ready, me and my family were ready to come back to the United States, and we were interested in moving to New England. And so my first job out of PhD was to work at the University of Hartford, and I've been there for about 16 years. The Rell Center has been around since 2011, and the director has always been a member of my home department, which is the Department of Politics, Economics, and International Studies at the University of Hartford, which is in the College of Arts and Sciences. And so I, over the years, I have this background in sort of environmental policy, but I'm this experience abroad, but you know, I'm interested in how that plays out in America. And so I've been working for several years on different ways to engage my students in the policy process. And so I was on a sabbatical in 2019. And when I returned, I had the opportunity to come on as director of the Rell Center at that time. And so it's a perfect match for the kind of things I was doing in the classroom, you know, where I'm trying to get my students to check out the legislature and think about, you know, learn about the policies that are being discussed there and try to engage with that process. So it's been a great opportunity for me to work with the Rell board and the former governor because they know so much about about that world, and I'm still learning, I have to say. Yeah.
And just to zoom in on one of the many lines under your signature. Just tell us a quick fun fact about the National Geographic experience.
Yeah, so I've been a National Geographic Explorer since 2019, and that's what you get to call yourself if you get funding from them. And as I said before, my work in the past has been on water policy and environmental policy. And one of their key areas is plastic pollution. And so that's something I've worked on for the last decade or so. So I have funding from National Geographic. I've gotten to work in India and with researchers around the world in Indonesia and Uganda. Mm-hmm. And this past summer, I got to go on a trip with them to the Arctic Circle to circumnavigate Svalbard. So they're amazing. I mean, everybody loves National Geographic. I don't have to tell you how amazing they are, but I'm really excited that I get to work with them sometimes.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, let's turn our attention to the center. I guess we'll get into the kind of extended information that our program does, but first and foremost, does it offer resources, and does it welcome not only University of Hartford students but the general public as well?
Yeah, when I first came on in 2011, in 2019, the pattern had been sort of one or two public events per year that were often on campus, but had an outward facing sort of audience, and then one sort of student centered event per year. And so that might be, that they host a panel on campus with legislators and experts from the media to talk about, political issues in the state. Or we might bring back graduates who are working in the public sector or with public service to talk to our students about their career paths. And when I first came on, it was 2019, and, spoiler alert, the pandemic happened pretty quickly after I started, and that had a huge impact on everyone's sort of in-person programming for a time.
Yeah.
So we were able to shift that and do some online, just like everyone else did at the time, some Zoom events. But I don't think at the time we realized how much of an opportunity that whole time period opened up for us in terms of people thinking about civil engagement, people yearning for more civil engagement from their leaders. So to answer your question, we do have public-facing programming, and then we have some programming for students. And I think we kind of do more sort of public-facing programming at this moment in time.
So do the people that you interact with, whether they're students or non-students at the university, are you holding out positive hope for 2024 and beyond that there is a growing interest and passion for better civil discourse in politics? I mean, are we getting to the tipping point where those who do not practice the best, or who do not adopt the best practices of civil discourse in politics, are going to get the message, or they're going to get fired by the voters eventually?
I mean, I hope so. I'm definitely a glass is half full kind of person. And so I latch on to the positive signs that I see. I do think we're in this really kind of tumultuous period in our country's history where, because of, technology and the ways we can be connected right now, it's kind of gotten ahead of us a little bit, and we haven't really established the rules around what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. Mm. But we've done some really interesting programming where we worked with this group called the Institute for Civility in Government. And they are interested in promoting, just like it sounds, civility in government. And we collaborated with them to host workshops. And we did workshops the first year for the Connecticut Legislature and the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education, the Council of Small Towns, the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. So we were kind of thinking, how do we support these people who are on the front lines of a lot of that negative sort of blowback from the public? How do we give them tools to weather that and to manage? I think any of us, I think it's very human to be attacked and to want to react to that. But I think it can be much, better for society if those those folks who are working on school boards or councils in towns, you know, have a little bit of training that can help them deal with that and maintain their composure so that people can kind of get their all their negative, you know, energy out and then come to the table to talk about solutions.
Right. So, well, I was going to say, we'll talk a little bit more about that as well as some exciting opportunities for folks to be involved in the annual Civility Awards initiative. And we'll talk a little bit about upcoming activities with the RELL Center. I have Dr. Catherine Owens on the line, and she is the director of the Governor M. Jody RELL Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to talk more about the RELL Center and how they are working to play a role in improving ethics in government, enhancing the importance of civil discourse in politics, as well as promoting citizen involvement in public service and government. We'll be back with Dr. Owens in just a second. Stick with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this. Hey, if you want to grow native around your home, neighborhood, or community, Yukon Extension and Connecticut's DEEP Wildlife Division just released an updated list of Connecticut businesses that grow and or sell native trees and shrubs. And for the first time, perennials are now included. Compiled from a survey of both wholesale and retail businesses, the Connecticut Native Tree, Shrub, and Perennial Availability List identifies nurseries and garden centers that sell Connecticut native trees, shrubs, and perennials. This guide was created to assist municipalities, conservation organizations, homeowners and landscape architects, designers, and contractors with locating native plants for their habitat restoration and wildlife enhancement. To check it out and get planting, just visit s.yukon.edu/CTNativeAvailability. Well, we are back, and we've got Dr. Catherine Owens on the line. She is the director of the Governor M. Jody RELL Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford. That center was established in 2011. She's been leading the organization since 2019. We were talking a little bit about their work toward promoting greater civil discourse in politics. So, Dr. Owens, do you think that the renewed interest and energy toward re-engaging students in civics education at the earliest possible age in our school systems here in Connecticut and across the country perhaps will play a role in helping you and your team at the RELL Center better accomplish your goals in that department?
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, as a political science professor, I think civic engagement is so important. And I think with everything, you know, when we're sharing information with students, when we're telling them about the big problems in the world, you know, the worst case scenario is that they lose hope. And, you know, what we really want is for them to feel their own political efficacy, to feel like what they do matters. And all the work that the RELL Center does with the Connecticut legislature and connecting students with that, I think, can really help them see the process and understand how to engage in the process and be a part of, you know, our society. So I think civics education is so important. And certainly that's something like that the RELL Center wants to support and promote.
So in the 12 years or so that the RELL Center has been in existence, I know that your center encourages students and others to pursue careers in public service and also supports student public service internships. Do you guys have like a little hall of fame yet of students who have been very engaged in the RELL Center who have gone on to either run for or be appointed to any high level public service or political work?
That's a great question. And I think some of the people who had been the director of the Rail Center before me probably know of, have a list. I can think of the students that our department has worked with who've gone on to do internships in the Connecticut legislature or gone on to work with lobbying firms or PR firms and engage in state politics, work with unions in the state. And so I can certainly think of students from our department who have made that local connection with politics and have gone on to make that their career.
Very good. Well, we want to turn our attention toward the future and the rest of what might be happening at and with the Rail Center in 2024. Are the annual civility awards on the radar for you, Dr. Owens?
They certainly are. And I'm so glad you mentioned them because I hope your audience will think of potential nominees or share it with people. We love self-nominations. We think, the idea behind this award is to recognize a school or a teacher or a classroom that has implemented a project or a program that fosters civility. And we've had some amazing winners in the past. The Political Action Club at Farmington High School is one of our previous winners. That's a student-led club that hosts nonpartisan debates before local political races, and it's all done by the students with the support of their teacher, Lance Goldberg. And one of the other award winners we've had is a teacher from Spring Glen School in Hamden, Connecticut, Mary Nelson, who had a project focusing on spoken word poetry that got students to explore a lot of, this was right during the pandemic, a lot of the issues around civility or lack of civility that was happening at their school and in their community. But we would love, to have nominations and to highlight the nominees and the winners through our podcast and our newsletter. There is a form that people can find on our website, which you can access at hartford.edu/rel. And it's just a Google form. It's a very short application process, but we're really seeking those nominees because it's hard to get information out. There's so many sources of information out there that sometimes it's hard to connect your information with the right, audience.
So this is an award to recognize K-16 classrooms, clubs, or schools that encourage dialogue, action, education, or engagement around integrity in public discourse and civility. Hopefully 2024 and all that is in store for us in this really important year to come will be part of this. And we have the best turnout ever in terms of nominations. Once again, you just need to go to hartford.edu/rel and look for the application for their annual civility awards. Dr. Owens, any other activities on the radar yet as we move into this really, really important and high-profile election year?
Yes. I mean, we're continuing to do the work we have. We're hoping to sponsor more speakers that promote civil engagement. And then with students on campus, we've collaborated with a group called ENACT, the Educational Network for Active Civic Transformation, which is out of Brandeis. And we're going to be promoting an app on campus called Motivote that helps. It's really for anyone, but especially for students who might miss the boat on registering or not realize they need to register at home versus at school or, that kind of thing. It provides sort of like useful information for them to meet deadlines and prepare and make sure they're registered to vote. So we're going to be promoting that app on campus in the coming year. We have a podcast that you can learn about on that website. And then the Civility Award is, I think, as you said, a really big one, especially this year.
Very good. So in terms of folks outside the school community and outside the greater Hartford region, just remind folks in the last couple of minutes that we have with you how they can get involved with the Governor M. Jody Rail Center for Public Service and what's the best way for them to do that, to tap your resources or to, get up there and get into some activities?
Yeah. I mean, if anyone's interested in some of the things I've talked about, they're welcome to reach out to me. My email address is kowens@hartford.edu. And we have ongoing programming. We're always open to collaborations and discussing ideas, potential collaborations. And a lot of our workshops have been targeted towards specific organizations just because we want to make sure we're connecting with the people that we think can use it most. But as I said, we're always open to new collaborations and ideas, and they could check out our website to sort of see if programs are coming up, or reach out to me and we can discuss.
Fantastic. The Governor M. Jody Rell Center for Public Service at the University of Hartford is providing the community and academic community a forum for the discussion of ethics in government, the importance of civil discourse in politics, and citizen involvement in public service in government. They're also encouraging students and others to pursue careers in public service and assist providing a clearinghouse for student public service internships. If you'd like to get involved or support this organization, you can begin just by visiting their website at hartford.edu, put a / in and the word REL, R-E-L-L, for our former governor. Their director is Dr. Catherine Owen. She's been kind enough to be our guest for this midpoint segment today on the award-winning For the People. Today on the award-winning For the All right, the cheery voice on the phone this morning is our friend Suzanne Kulgowski. We talk to her once or twice a year to remind you folks about the great work that her team is doing at ARI of Connecticut. They've certainly grown over the years since their humble beginnings back in the early 1950s. But they've intentionally remained one of Connecticut's smallest providers of services for adults with developmental disabilities, and their intimate size enables them to provide a family-like environment and a more individualized approach to services and supports based on each of their members and clients' needs and interests. So we've got three events we want you to put on your calendar, including one that's coming up relatively soon. So it's time to get your team together or get yourself signed up for their upcoming 18th annual Walk for Independence. We'll tell you about that. If you're a golfer and you like to compete out on the links, we've also got an opportunity for you. Or if you just like to listen to music and meet great people and have a great time, well, we're going to have you pencil in something in the fall for ARI to provide them with some assistance, which they do desperately need, as we'll hear from Suzanne over the course of the next 10 or 12 minutes. Suzanne, how you been down there at ARI of Connecticut?
Doing great, John. Thank you so much for having me today.
Sure. So this organization started in around 1952, and it really was sort of just the most organic of beginnings, because like so many worthy organizations like ARI, it sprung from a need within some families down there in Lower Fairfield County, right?
Yeah, that's exactly how it started. Was a few families got together and said, you know, we need some help, we need some support, and there's nothing out there. And so they actually put an ad in the paper and said, hey, this is our situation, and if you've got a situation that sounds similar, come on out and meet us. And they had a room packed full of people who were all looking for supports for their children with special needs. And that's how we started. And that those group of families really wanted to serve the Stamford community, which is why, in honor of our founders, we have stayed, as you said, intentionally small here in Stamford. We're a very local organization. All of our services are provided in Stamford, though we certainly serve individuals who live in the towns surrounding Stamford.
Very good. So we talked a little bit in the intro about these individualized services and sort of this kind of boutique home style atmosphere of ARI of Connecticut. Let's talk a little bit about your team and the professionals and those who collaborate and network with ARI to be able to deliver that kind of individualized program of care and support, and also how you see that kind of individualized attention making significant differences in the lives of individuals with developmental issues whose counterparts elsewhere may not be enjoying those same results.
Yeah, so we really like the small kind of family-like environment that we have here, and it allows us to really get to know each of the individuals that we serve. Even as the CEO, I know them all by name and by face. I know the vast majority of our staff by name and by face, and so we're able to really customize and individualize our services. Not just on the needs of the individual where they are today, but to kind of project where they might be in the future, or to deal with their changing needs as they have different medical or mental health concerns, that we're able to adapt pretty quickly, get a group of people together pretty quickly who all know these individuals very intimately. And in some cases, for a very long time, we have employees that have been here for 20 and 30 years. And so they know the individuals very well over a long time and are able to really customize services based on their really in-depth knowledge of each person.
I would imagine with some key employees being at the agency for so long, they've also kind of lived through all the ins and outs and all the ups and downs of the programs and supports that have been made available through the Connecticut state and federal governments. So you've got some real veterans who are expert at kind of cutting through some of the frustrations and the red tape that the loved ones and family members of individuals with alternate abilities may be discovering as they try to get support.
Yeah, that is true. We do have quite a wealth of knowledge here and an ability to help families. Even we get calls all the time, John, for families that are desperately looking for services. And even if we ourselves don't have the ability to help them because we don't have the, you know, an opening in our program or whatever, we work really hard to provide them with information and resources so that they can find some other place in the community that could provide their services. But it definitely helps to have that wealth of knowledge here at the organization to be able to be a resource to families.
And to be able to retain key staff for two or three decades is evidence to how much the staff love and appreciate the organization where they work. So for folks who may be interested in working with ARI of Connecticut or the populations that you serve down in Lower Fairfield County, or they may be looking for a change in their career, you, like so many other agencies and businesses and organizations, from food service on up to through the medical profession and contracting and manufacturing, you guys are sort of still swimming against the tide when it comes to keeping your employment roles filled, right?
That is certainly true. We definitely, not just at ARI, but across the state and the nation in this field, are struggling to find the quality staff that we require to provide the services for the individuals. And so we are always looking for good staff. Anybody interested in working in this field could go to our website at www.aricct.org and check out our openings. And we would love to consider new employees. One of the great things, as you said, is that we retain staff for decades, and that's wonderful. But those staff who have been here for decades are or have retired,
mm-hmm, sure.
And we have to fill those roles. So definitely we are always looking for good staff who really want to work with individuals with disabilities and truly make a difference in their lives.
Yeah, on the other hand, as all of the rest of Southern Fairfield County is looking for good, loyal, trustworthy, and responsible employees to come and work for their businesses and for their organizations, you can also deliver for them out of your small client base. You've got some really talented and dedicated folks who are ready to go to work at a business in the neighborhood, aren't you?
We sure do. We have individuals who are currently looking for employment. We have individuals that we've been serving who have worked elsewhere for decades. They work in the community and are at retirement age, some of them, but they've been employed in the same companies here in Stamford for 10 or 20 or more years. You know, we're definitely a part of the community. And as obviously we need employees, we also provide employees to the community with the people that we support. And just as we have volunteers and are very dependent on volunteers to keep ARI running, we also volunteer in the community. The individuals that we serve volunteer at the food bank and at local soup kitchens, sure, and Stamford Hospital. We've been working with them for many years. So we have people from the community that we need, and we also provide for the community.
So if I'm a business person and, you know, I've been up against the wall and trying to keep my employment roles filled, can you just talk for a minute or two about how ARI really creates a fantastic transition and support network if that business is good enough to consider possibly bringing on an ARI client as an employee?
Sure. Everyone that we serve that works in the community, first we work with them to find their job and then to train them on their job. And we stay there for as long as it takes for them to fully understand their job. And we also go in on a very regular basis, depending on the needs of the individual. For some, it can be hours a day, or for others, it can be hours a week or a month, depending on their ability. And so we have job coaches that stay with them. And we've had situations where the job has changed, the expectations have changed, and we go right back in there with excessive amounts of job training and development to help the individual be able to retain their job. So we don't just kind of put them there and hope they succeed. We are right there by their side to make sure that they succeed. And certainly plenty of research has shown that individuals with developmental disabilities who work in the community are incredibly dedicated employees and very often are longer term employees than many of the other people that we're hiring who tend to kind of hop from job to job. Our guys don't do that. They're very happy once they get settled.
That's super. So folks, if you're hearing something that's inspiring to you, it doesn't matter if you live in the greater Stamford area or anywhere within the sound of our voice. And I'm talking about you folks out there on Long Island as well, down Westchester County. ARI of Connecticut can certainly bring you on board as a part of their growing team of supporters at the upcoming 18th annual Walk for Independence. That's coming up fairly quickly, Suzanne. Why don't you open up the invitation book and send one out?
Yeah, absolutely. This is on April 28th. It's at Cove Island Park here in Stamford. And it is a fabulous day of family and fun. We have various activities. Of course, we have our walk, we have a DJ, and lots of food and fun. Really always a great experience. And we obviously have sponsors for that event. So if anybody is interested, they could certainly get in touch with us.
Excellent. And registering on the day of at the location, or are you able to offer like pre-registration so maybe people can get their family or their scout troop or their service group or their workplace together and come down as a group?
Definitely. You can go to our website, again, aricct.org, and you can make sure that you're registered in advance. You can also show up on the day if you haven't registered in advance. You are always welcome, and you can register right there on site.
Very good. And then you get a few weeks of, if you could call it a break, between a huge walk and a golf tournament. Probably not, doesn't seem like a break, but you turn your attention to the from the beachfront to the rolling greens and fairways of one of our local golf clubs for your next benefit.
Yes, that is the Lotstein Martin Golf Tournament on June 20th. Lotstein and Martin are two of our founding families, so named after them in honor of them and the great work that they've done for generations in for their family supporting ARI. And that is here at Sterling Farms Golf Course in Stamford. And again, on our website, you can find that information. Always looking for sponsors and, of course, people to come out and set up some foursomes and come out for a great day. We have lunch and then golf and then dinner and raffles, and it's always a good time.
And the date of that event is?
June 20th.
June 20th, great. And then we're flipping a few calendar pages over and looking into September for your gala?
That's actually this year. It's in November, on November 8th. We had to bump it a little bit into the fall, but it is our annual fall ball. It is a semi-formal gala, and again, a fabulous time. The majority of the individuals that we serve are in attendance, as well as lots and lots of guests from the community, and everybody always has a blast at that event. Lots of dancing and fun.
Excellent. Currently, ARI of Connecticut provides residential supports for 25, a little over two dozen individuals in group homes and 18 who are living fairly independently. Congratulations to them and ARI for making that happen. They also operate a day program providing community activities, life skills, and vocational training for over 70 individuals throughout the region. If you'd like to help them, please consider participating in the upcoming walk. The 18th annual Walk for Independence, their golf tournament, or pencil in attendance to their ball coming up in early November. Our guest, Suzanne Kuligowski, is kind enough to be here for us to review all of what's been happening over the past year. She's president and CEO of ARI of Connecticut. Suzanne, thank you so much. Great to talk to you again, and best of luck with the upcoming events. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.